Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on Monday, the 29th of August, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. We will talk with Divas Melinda League and also Sarah Johnson about their participation in Who's Your Diva Saturday, September 10th at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Let's talk with Leslie Wood from the Juneau Pride Chorus about their new season and Friday's Whale Watch Cruise. Amanda Compton will be here to talk with Juneau's new rabbi, and we'll meet Pat Moore, future guest host for the program. We'll see Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, mostly clear skies with scattered showers, low temperatures around 46 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, mostly cloudy skies with isolated showers and high temperatures around 61 degrees.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Three members of the U.S. House of Representatives tour the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Congressman Mike Simpson of Idaho, Tom Cole of Oklahoma, and Congresswoman Betty McCollum of Minnesota traveled to Fort Yates, North Dakota on Saturday. Charles Murphy is chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe.
What this particular meeting was really about was the learning of the tribes and how they really run. They wanted to see it firsthand. And so we give them that opportunity to see it firsthand and how we operate our tribe and what the dollars that we get from the federal government.
The tribe addressed many issues, including health care, housing, education, and recent flooding. The reservation of more than 2 million acres includes land in South Dakota and North Dakota. More than 12,000 people live in reservation boundaries. The representatives are members of the House Appropriations Committee and Subcommittee on Interior, Environment, and Related Agencies. Cheryl Carey is executive director of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. She says they spoke to the delegation not just about funding issues, but about policy. Carey says many issues the tribe has and moving forward to become more self-sufficient deal with policy.
Granted, there's always the need for more funding for all of our programs, particularly our road system, our education system, our housing system, a lot of our infrastructure needs. But a lot of it also has to do with a lot of red tape and a lot of policy that hinders some of the actions that the tribe could be taking ourselves in order to become self-sufficient. And I think the delegation was really open to that discussion and were very interested. They asked a lot of very intelligent, pointed questions, and we were able to, you know, really dialogue well about that, and I think that was one of the strengths of the visit that they had here.
The tribe says the meeting was a step in improving government-to-government relationships. Two men are going to prison, one for vandalizing petroglyphs and another for stealing a petroglyph, both in southern Nevada. Willie Albright reports from Reno.
An Arizona man has been sentenced to 15 months in a federal prison for defacing Native American rock art considered sacred by Colorado River tribes. 21-year-old David Smith will also pay a nearly $10,000 fine, serve 1 year of probation, and perform 50 hours of community service. Smith admitted to shooting petroglyphs with paintball pellets despite seeing signs warning that it is illegal to damage or deface them. In another case, a 58-year-old real estate agent will serve a 6-month prison sentence for stealing a petroglyph bearing images of bighorn sheep from a remote site in the Spring Mountains. Michael Cook was arrested after a sheriff spotted the 300-pound artifact in his front yard. The boulder was returned to its original location by helicopter. Authorities say stolen petroglyphs are seldom returned to their original locations. Cook's is the first felony conviction in Nevada under the Federal Archaeological Resources Protection Act since 2003. Leroy Howell, a member of the Pahrump Paiute tribe, says the theft is comparable to taking a Bible and ripping it in half. For National Native News, I'm Willie Albright in Reno, Nevada.
In Canada, a sports store is holding a drive this week to collect hockey equipment for First Nations. Source for Sports is gathering the items in conjunction with an educational drug abuse resistance program designed to give kids life skills to avoid drugs, gangs, and violence. The drive starts today and will run for 2 weeks. During this month in 1986, an act of Congress restored federal recognition to the Klamath tribe. Termination by the federal government in the 1950s heavily impacted the Oregon tribes. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice 1. The Native American Radio Service.
The time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau, where our first two guests, Melinda League and Sarah Johnson, are two of the competitors involved in the Saturday, September 10th event, Who's Your Diva, put on by the Juneau Lyric Opera folks. Thank you very much for coming down the station, Melinda and Sarah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So first of all, I'm going to ask you both the same questions. First, Melinda is going to answer, and then Sarah's going to answer, and then we'll switch around from there. First question, what to you is a diva, Melinda?
A diva is a confident individual who expresses herself through her body and her soul and through her music.
Sarah?
To me, a diva is someone who really enjoys her music, who loves every minute of performing on a stage and for the people who are watching.
Sarah, when did you discover you were a diva and not just an ordinary singer?
Well, I've been singing since I was 8 years old, and then a couple years ago I met Tom Loker, and he invited me to do performances, diva performances at local restaurants, which really brought out the diva in me.
Melinda?
For me, I think it was everybody pointing out that you know, when you get older, I want your autograph. I just love listening to you sing, and so all the solos that I've ever sang, and I think for me, being a diva just means that somebody that can actually get up on the stage, perform, and feel, you know, all the things that go through performing a song and being able to make everybody love it and say, wow, that was amazing, that came out of you. So,
Melinda, what does singing do for you emotionally and spiritually?
Emotionally and spiritually, there's just, music in general is just, there's something about it that makes me feel so, it just gets to the core of my body, to my soul. And so emotionally, just singing makes me feel good. It makes me feel confident. I love performing in front of other people and you know, getting the audience to really get into it and say, wow, you know, thank you for doing that. And so it really bumps up my self-esteem when people are happy. So emotionally, spiritually, I just feel so close to God. I'm really happy that, you know, that there's music out there that just can get you up to that, you know, highest cloud, if you will. But it just, music takes you to another level that you just can't get anywhere else.
Sarah?
Singing really expresses who I am, and a lot of times it's how I'm feeling, and I put that into my songs, and I show it in my emotions while I'm singing.
This isn't as much fun as I thought it would be. I thought there would be some catfighting in singing. what singers do you look up to and why?
I enjoy music by current singers like Taylor Swift. She writes her own music, and I respect her styles. And then also I'd like to say who inspires me is local artists who give all their time and effort into the Juneau community to help out with singers such as myself or Melinda who just want to get out there and perform for others.
Linda?
Singers that I look up to, I'm from an older generation, so I mean, I enjoy soul music and gospel and Aretha Franklin. I enjoy Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, and those amazing high notes that she's able to squeak out. Those are the singers that I look up to, is that, you know, anybody that can actually just get out there and express themselves.
Melinda, what do you do to keep your voice in shape?
I like to take voice lessons here locally. I used to take voice lessons with Ron Anderson. He's a famous, if you look him up, Google him. He's just an amazing guy. He's very expensive, but he's in the L.A. area in California, and he just He's helped improve my voice a lot.
Through Skype or?
Through Skype, no. You actually have to go down, fly down, meet with him one-on-one, and it's an amazing experience.
Sarah?
I've taken voice lessons since I was 8 years old. I was in the choir with Missouri Smythe for 5 years, and also I'm in chamber choir at JDHS.
Sarah, what songs will you be singing during Who's Your Diva, and why did you pick them?
I'm going to be singing I Have Nothing by Whitney Houston, and If I Die Young by the band Perry, and they really stood out to me, and they're songs I can relate to.
Linda?
I will be singing Evanescence, Somebody's Fool, and I'll also be singing Pink's Perfect, the clean version. And these two songs, just these two artists in general, they know how to express themselves, and I just fell in love with the music, and so hopefully I can, you know, take that on and express myself as well as they do to their audiences.
Linda, what do you hope will set you apart from the other divas?
That's a good question, Jeff. I hope that I'll be able to get up there and just blow the crowd away, and for Juno to understand how exciting this opportunity is for everybody to come out and see this. If you're not there, it just isn't the same, you know, YouTubing it or anything like that. I mean, I don't know how you feel about going to a live performance, but, you know, seeing your favorite band or whatnot perform is entirely different than just, you know, viewing it from the TV or whatnot. So I'm hoping everybody gets off their butts and comes to see us perform. And what's going to set me apart is, I think, being able to, like I said, get up there, express myself, and we're all in this together. So, I mean, it's a friendly competition, but it's going to be really fun. So I hope everybody will come and enjoy it.
Sarah, what do you think will set you apart?
I'm one of the two teenage divas in the Juno Lyric Opera's Who's Your Diva, so I hope that my young personality and my youthful energy will set me apart.
All right, Who's Your Diva will be Saturday, September 10th at 7:30 p.m. at Juno Arts and Culture Center. If you need more information about that, you can check them out their website, www.jlo, I believe, junolyricopera.org. Sarah and Melinda, anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, just that website again is www.junolyricopera.org. So go vote for your diva, and hopefully you'll be able to make the show, because it's going to be great.
Yes, thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to wine me and dine me. Don't try to fool me, be Julie, either amuse me or lose me. I'm getting hungry. Peel me a grape. Pop me a cork, French me a fry, crack me a nut, bring a bowl full of bonbons, chill me some wine, keep standing by, just entertain me. Champagne me, show me you love me, kid, love me, best way to cheer me. Cashmere me, I'm getting hungry. I'll be an agreeable chap. Love me and leave me in luxury's lap. Hop when I holler,
skip when I snap, when I say do it, jump to it. Sent out for scotch, boil me a crab, cut me a rose, make my tea with the petals. Just hang around, pick up the tab, and never outthink me. Just mink me, polar bear rub me, don't bug me, new thunder burn me, you hurt me. I'm getting hungry, peel me a how to be an agreeable chap. Love me and leave me in luxury's lap. Hop when I holler, skip when I snap, when I say do it.
Time is 3:18 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest are Leslie Wood, director of the Juneau Pride Chorus, and one of the singers involved, Paula Terrell. Thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
So for people who do not know, could you talk about the Pride Chorus, how it started, and when it started?
The chorus started in 1997 as a project of PFLAG, which is our sponsoring group, PFLAG Juneau. And it was a group of women that got together and decided to become a women's chorus. Not that, you know, we became a women's chorus and chose the name Juneau Pride Chorus soon after that. We've been singing, this is our 14th season, and I became the conductor in 2000, so this is my 12th season conducting.
Paula, what's it like singing with a chorus? What's it like singing with a chorus?
It's wonderful. It's a group of wonderfully supportive women with wonderful songs, and we have lots of fun, and it's a very diverse group. We have younger people and older people and middle people like me. And I love to sing and I love the music.
But how many people are involved in it now?
Well, we're starting our rehearsals tomorrow, and so we'll see how many will be this in the chorus this season. But last season, we had about 38 singers, and that was our biggest yet. And that was really exciting to have that many singers for the concert. So we're looking forward to having some new members come this year. I know of some that are going to join, but I wanted to let everybody know out in your listening audience that our first rehearsal is tomorrow. We rehearse Tuesdays 5:30 to 7 at Resurrection Lutheran Church, which is right downtown on 10th and Glacier. And it's a fun group. And if you have ever thought about joining a chorus, this one is the chorus to join because it's a lot of fun. And it's a really great group of people. And if you want to try us out, just come down for, 5 or 6 weeks and give us a try.
You want to talk for a little bit about the magic of women's voices singing together in harmony?
Okay. Well, as you know, I get to stand on the podium and listen to all these wonderful women sing, and the richness that comes with this, the voice when all the voices join together, it's a wonderful experience, and it's because it's a chorus of just women. We can really hear the depth of the women's voices. We have some women who can sing down as low as baritones and as high as, the Beethoven sopranos. And so it's quite a range and a lot of talent all within that whole group. We have a great percussionist and a great accompanist. So we have have fun making a lot of good music together.
Paula, what's it like being in the thick of things there?
In the thick of things?
Right, singing with all those voices harmonizing around you.
It's wonderful because Leslie positions us and we position ourselves too, so we can hear each other, which is really wonderful. And then, if anybody likes to sing, you don't even have to read music. We have a lot of people who don't read music. And they sing, and it's a wonderful experience. I mean, it's just sometimes I'm too tired, or I think I'm too tired to go, and I'm sluggish, and then I get there, and it's totally energizing. So it's special.
Who arranges the music?
Well, we have quite a long process of how we choose music. We choose music that has been arranged for women's voices generally, and I would like to learn how to arrange music. I don't know how to do it yet, but we have some that have been arranged by other women's choruses in our group of choruses called GALA, Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses, and so that is a really rich resource for music for women's voices.
And you're having a whale watch cruise this next Friday?
Yes, on September 2nd, Friday, we're having a whale watch cruise from 5 until 8 from the Allen Marine docks. Our good friend and singer, Cheryl Cook, is our captain, and she'll be taking us out to all the special places to see whales. She knows right where to go. And the tickets are being sold at the Jack or on the Jack website. And they're $50 for 19 and older and $25 for 0 to 18.
Will you be singing with the whales, through the whales?
I'm sure we'll be singing spontaneously.
And it's a season of concerts. You want to talk about your season coming up? You said it's just the practice?
Yes. Well, we have a lot planned this year because our goal is to get to Denver Gala Festival next July. So the Gala International Festival is going to be in Denver, and there'll be over 120 choruses from all over the world singing there, and we've never been to that big of a festival, but we're really excited to go since Alaska Airlines flies directly to Denver. And so that our year's sort of scheduled around raising funds for this, thus the whale watching cruise, but we're also doing a film festival in October, a gay and lesbian film festival, which we'll be singing at a couple songs. We often do a community performance around World AIDS Day, so we're thinking about working with the 4A's to set something up there. We're also planning a very special Valentine event called the Singing Dessert, and we'll be singing and providing dessert for people, and that's going to be a lot of fun. And then our annual concert, including with our silent auction, will be later in April, April 21st.
And for people who do not know, the 4A's are?
The 4A's is the AIDS Awareness Group in Alaska that supports people with HIV.
I've been talking to Pride Chorus Director Leslie Wood and Paula Terra, one of the many singers involved, about the Pride Chorus. I got a rehearsal coming up tomorrow night. At what time?
5:30.
If you need more information about that, is there a phone number people can call?
Yes, you can call me. My number is 209-7756. We're also on Facebook, and we're working on getting a website this year. There was one thing I wanted to say. Oh, about the music that we're singing this year. The music I'm really excited about, we have the most music that we're going to learn ever in a season, but they're not that very difficult music, not the very difficult songs, and so I think it's very, very accessible for any type of singer. It'll be a lot of fun. It'll be easy to learn. I've been busy making rehearsal CDs for all the different parts, including the piano playing and everything. And so people are well supported in learning how to sing with us and what to sing and having a lot of time to memorize things. One of the songs we're singing is Annie Lennox, Sing, My Sister Sing, it's called, and that's specifically for her efforts in raising awareness about AIDS. And so we're excited about singing that song. And we're also singing a couple of other songs that have to do with our theme. It's a loose theme called about courage and journey. That's our focus this year.
You mentioned rehearsal CDs. How does that work?
Well, I sit at the piano and I record myself playing, singing the different parts, and then I kind of build those together so you can hear the different parts and the part that you're assigned to singing.
All right, Leslie Wood and Paula Terrell, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you,
Thanks,
Jeff.
Jeff.
The chorus likes to sing a wide variety of music. Some of it's political. Some of it's lyrical. Some of it's political. There's some that's political. But every once in a while, we like to pick just a favorite tune of all. And this next one is one that many of you will believe you've heard before. But have you?
These are a few of my favorites. Good afternoon, Juno. My name is Amanda Compton, and I'm in the studio here with Dev Brown on a Juno Afternoon. But with me is a really exciting guest. It is Juno's first ever non-seasonable year-round rabbi, Dov Gartenberg. Dov, thanks for coming into the studio today.
It's a pleasure.
I was hoping that maybe you could, besides introducing yourself, and it sounds like your name is both could be pronounced both Dov and Dove, maybe you could go into that just a little bit. For those of us who are not familiar with Judaism and hence the rabbi's position in the religion, could you give us a little bit of an overview and your particular responsibilities as a rabbi?
Sure. Just a first thing about the name. It's in Hebrew, it's pronounced Dove. If anyone read the book Exodus, it's one of the main characters. But Dove means bear. So in moving up here, I'm with my in my natural habitat with the other bears, I suppose.
Welcome.
But I about being a rabbi and Judaism, I think a few things to say in this short program about Judaism is one of the world's oldest religions. It's gone through many phases. And the rabbi is really one in a long line of religious leaders who have become important within Jewish history. But the rabbi is primarily, the word rabbi means teacher in Hebrew. A rabbi is someone who teaches Torah, which is the word for, literally means instruction, but is the Jewish scriptural tradition, which is different than the Christian tradition. We share with the Christian tradition the Bible, at least the Hebrew Bible, which is also central in Judaism. But we also have what we call rabbinic literature, which is the Talmud and commentaries on the Bible. It's a vast, vast literature. In fact, that's what rabbis really do when they spend time in school, is they have to master that literature. And we are interpreters of that tradition to the Jewish community and to the broader world. So that's basically what a rabbi does, whether a rabbi's in Juneau or in Jerusalem, is to interpret Torah, the instruction to our people in our synagogues and communities in the wider world.
Could you tell us a little bit about your specific role as a rabbi, or how you came to be a rabbi, where you grew up, what choices and influences you had that led you to your current position?
Well, I'll tell a story about that. I was once interviewed with some other seminary students from different religious traditions, a Catholic seminarian, a Protestant seminarian, and myself. I was in rabbinical school, and we were asked that question, and it first went to the Catholic seminarian, who was formerly a fighter pilot over Vietnam. He had a vision when he was doing his flights that he needed to change his life, and so he went into the seminary. And then the Protestant seminarian had been living on the streets and had a vision and realized that he needed to change his life and went into the Protestant seminary. And so it came to me, and I said, I think it was my mother. So really, I didn't have that traumatic conversion experience although there are people who probably do. I think it's more common in our tradition is really your household, the way you grow up, has a great influence on how you, if you choose to become a rabbi. And I came from a family where learning and study and conversation and discussion, even debate, were very common parts of our dinner table. And also a love of people. All those things contributed. It was my parents were very, and my family very, very important in my decision to become a rabbi. So
Where did you grow up?
The quick answer.
Where did you grow up?
I was born in Hawaii, but I grew up in Southern California. And then I spent a number of years in Israel, at least 3 years. So, which is also part of the educational experience of
most rabbis. Was that following high school?
Hmm?
Was your time there following high school?
My time was there during college and then subsequent years of a sabbatical year, but also a year in rabbinical school. So part of rabbis, in order to be able to interpret the tradition, have to know Hebrew, to be fluent in Hebrew. It is the first layer of Jewish traditions in the Hebrew language. And then there are several other languages, of course, Jews spoke over their long history, so we have to master those languages as well. So it's a lot of learning.
So unlike other religious leaders, you, as a rabbi, have the unique privilege of getting married. And right. I understand you did come and move to Juneau with your wife, correct?
That's right. And my wife, we came to Juneau. She got a wonderful position at Bartlett. And at the time, when she was interviewing, we met the congregation too, because wasn't planning necessarily to be rabbi here, but we certainly were going to be active in the congregation. And we started talking with them, and they were excited the fact that there was a rabbi coming up and living here. And then we worked out something so I could be year round and helping the congregation. I am an experienced congregational rabbi. I've served congregations in Seattle for most of my career and also in Southern California. So it'll be nice to be in a community that's really excited about having a rabbi year-round, and there'll be a lot of exciting things happening.
It sounds like there's a really receptive Jewish community here for your position. I was wondering if maybe you could go into that a little bit and talk about the Jewish community in Juneau, as well as the synagogue and your role in the synagogue, what a typical service is like.
Well, what I know about the community, I'm new, so I asked people before coming on the show, tell me a little bit about the history. In fact, I met with a descendant of the Goldstein family. There, you know, if you've been around Juneau downtown, there's a Goldstein building. The Goldstein, Mr. Goldstein came during the Gold Rush and was a provisioner, and established his family here. And there were a number of Jewish families that came during that time. And it was quite small. There was no synagogue or active community until much later. And then until 5 years ago, the community met in various churches for services. They brought up a rabbi for the High Holiday period, which is coming up in a month, the fall festivals. They would hire someone from the lower 48 to come up for 2 weeks and lead those services. And then 5 years ago, the Goldstein family helped the rest of the congregation to raise the money to purchase a building. So the building now, the congregation is located in Douglas on Cordoba. And it's become more active. They have a religious school. They have year-round programs, which they've done very, it's been an active congregation before there was a year-round rabbi. What I will do is strengthen what they already have and bring some rabbinic leadership that they haven't had year-round. So we'll be offering more classes. We're very, very big believers in having people over for the Sabbath, which is a big Jewish tradition. Our Sabbath is Friday night and Saturday, and not only do people go to the synagogue, but people entertain. They have festive meals at the home. So That's something I really love about Jewish tradition, and we're going to be doing a lot of that.
Is the food.
The food.
So,
the food, and you sing, and you have a great time. It's a very joyful tradition.
So the Jewish synagogue is on Cordova Street, which is if you cross the bridge and you go south on Douglas, it's your first right, and then you'll see the synagogue on the right.
Just three blocks up, I think.
Three blocks up on the right. And is it, could you tell us when the services are? Are they open to interested public, say, that aren't necessarily Jewish, mm-hmm. that are just curious?
Absolutely. And then classes are it is open to the public. This congregation is a small congregation, about 50 or so members, more or less, member households. And so they are not large enough yet to sustain a weekly Sabbath service. Say a full service synagogue, you'll say with 200 or plus members, would have a Friday evening service and a Saturday morning service, which are the main services for the Jewish Sabbath. And then there are all the festival services. So you have a concentration of festivals in the fall, which are coming up in a month. That's the New Year's, the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah. And then you have a festival, which is the basis for the name of our congregation here in Juneau. It's called Sukkot Shalom, which means a booth of peace. So this festival of booths is we would build temporary booths and sit and eat all our meals and actually live in those booths for a week. Now, Juneau in October probably is not the easiest place to live in a booth. So you have to remember that the Jewish festivals emerged out of the land of Israel, which has a different climate. But nevertheless, the synagogue's name is Sukkot Shalom, the booth of peace. And that's the last main holiday in the fall. And then there are another cycle of festivals in the spring.
When is the next holiday coming up?
Rosh Hashanah is the New Year's. That's going to be on September 28th. And we have our main services during the year. All synagogues around the world are the fall festivals are very, very, very large attendance. It's like Christians going to Christmas services. It's everyone shows up. And so it's a busy time for a rabbi. So I'll be busy preparing major sermons, and we'll have lengthy services and a lot of wonderful things that we do in the holidays.
So is the during the sermon, during the service that you would have, how would it differ to a different kind of service?
Well, say one thing you would notice if you came into a synagogue is that there's Hebrew. A lot of our prayers are chanted in the Hebrew tradition. There's English as well. Many of the prayers are 2,000 plus years, some 3,000 years old. So we are preserving traditions, very old traditions. So that's one element. There's a lot of singing. There are distinct rituals, like in Rosh Hashanah, we're going to blow a ram's horn. I should have brought one in. Next time. But we blow a ram's horn, and we have a certain series of blasts that usher in the new year. And each of the festivals we do has some distinctive ritual that we learned in childhood that is very much shapes our experience of being Jewish. Whether on Passover, for instance, we eat the unleavened bread, the matzahs, each of these holidays has a distinct element to it.
Now, the Jewish synagogue can be found on Facebook if anyone's curious about further contact. That's correct, right?
It's Congregation Sukkot Shalom, if you look in Facebook, Sukkat, new word, Shalom, Shalom. And that's a good way to learn about some of the activities and classes and events that we do here in Juneau. There'll be a lot of things on the site because of the encroaching holidays.
Dov, thanks for coming in. And before we end our program, I was wondering if there's anything that we didn't cover that you'd like to say.
Oh, don't ask a rabbi that. Oh, no. It was a pleasure and honor to be here and to give a little taste. I'll end with this story I told you before. There is a wonderful story about one of the great rabbis, Rabbi Hillel. And a person came to him, actually before it came to him, went to another rabbi, Rabbi Shammai, and said, teach me everything about Judaism while I stand on one foot. The first rabbi kicked him out. He's ridiculous. He can't teach Judaism while he's standing on one foot. So he went to Hillel, and Hillel said to him, that which is hateful to you, do not do to others. That is the essence of Judaism. Now go study. And that those words inspired this person to become a very committed Jew. So I think that would be my lesson for the day, and a little bit of what give you a sense of what a rabbi does.
Well, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 29th of August, 2011. Today is the anniversary of the death. We don't know much about his birth. Edmund Hoyle, 1769. He was born in 1671 or 72, possibly in Yorkshire, England. He may have been a lawyer. We're not sure. What we do know is that he was the first technical writer on card games. He lived in London. He taught high society the rules and the fine points of the card game whist, a four-person, two-team, trick-taking game. It was the premier card game of the Western world for three or four centuries. It began in the 16th century. It was called trump. It was also called rough, R-U-F-F. It was called honors, then swabbers. And then by the 18th century, it was called whist. Hoyle wrote about chess as well, and the card games piquet and quadrille, and a game called brag, which was an ancestor of poker. And he wrote a book on probability theory. He lived a good long life and continued to revise his treatise on whist until his death at the age of 97. It's the birthday of Karen Hess, born Baltimore, 1952, author of books for young adults. She married, she had two children, worked her way through a whole array of jobs, waitress and nanny and typesetter, proofreader, substitute teacher, book reviewer. Kept writing, published her first book in 1991, Wish on a Unicorn, and then in 1998, Out of the Dust, the story of a girl living through the Dust Bowl and the Great Depression. It won the Newbery Medal and the Scott Odell Award in 1998. And today is the first day of the Egyptian month of Thoth. It's the start of the year in the Egyptian calendar. Thoth was a very old Egyptian god who laid the egg from which Ra, the sun, was born, and was said to be the author of a book that contained all the secrets of the universe. The reader would understand the speech of animals, control all the magic in creation, but would be cursed from having read it. Here's a poem for today by Eric Nixon, entitled Riding the Red Line. On the subway, on a hot summer night, riding the red line, outbound to Alewife, so is everyone else, standing in the packed car, staring blankly at the reflections in the window, stealing looks every so often at the pretty mid-20-something sitting on the seat near me, noticing that she is glancing sideways at the paper the person next to her is reading. Well, not so much reading, since he's got his eyes looking to the side at someone else behind me. Everyone is pretending to look somewhere neutral. Everyone is experiencing ulterior motives, checking out everyone else around them, trying to be all sneaky about it. With each stop, the people change, the dynamics change, keeps the subway car fresh and interesting, just as long as she doesn't leave, I'll be happy standing here, packed among strangers with wandering eyes and stealing glances alongside them on this hot, hot night. Riding the Red Line by Eric Nixon, from Anything But Dreams, published by iUniverse Incorporated, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. Produced by Kathy Roach and written by Priscilla Kenter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:50 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Every now and then I get the idea of going on vacation. It's kind of hard to do that if you have a daily interview show, but I found somebody who's across the desk from me now, Pat Moore. He's going to be signing on as a new guest host for the program for a variety of shows, and I thought I'd bring him on the microphone here to talk a little bit about himself and his background. Pat, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're going to start doing your first show tomorrow.
Yes, I am. I'm very excited about that.
A little bit about your background, please.
Well, you had asked before we started how I got into broadcasting, and I got into broadcasting while I was in the process of trying to flunk out of college. It was my salvation.
you grew up in Alaska, pretty much.
Yes, I did. Family was here back in 1957. My father worked for the Alaska Railroad, was what brought us to the state. We lived in Anchorage when I first came up. I went to Washington State University, and I was going to be an engineer, and it turned out after I got there that was probably a bad career choice for me. And along the way, I met a really good friend, and he and I started talking, and he said he was working at the campus radio station. And so I went over to the campus radio station and cut a voice tape for them, and they liked my voice. So I hired on with them as a way to make money and changed my major to broadcasting. And it turned out to be a really magical major at Washington State. This was back in the 1960s, and essentially students ran the radio station and the TV station. So I was given the opportunity to do a lot of airtime. I did everything from being the morning coffee pot parade guy to putting together recreations of baseball games in the studio to changing the station over from black and white to color television, the TV station, and then for 2 years I wrote all of the copy that was read on the both radio and TV stations and was the student assistant teacher for the writing classes. So that was my introduction to radio. Then I went into the Air Force. When I got out, I went back into broadcasting and worked at KUAC in Fairbanks for a couple of years and then formed my own little production company up there.
You produced a show which is legendary around Alaska broadcasters, 45 Desperate Minutes.
That was, KUAC in the 70s was a really rich creative environment. And there were two guys who came up from San Diego and a kid named Tom Saxton and I. And we were the production crew for what replaced a live news slot. We had a satellite. It was the first satellite feed to Alaska, and we were quite excited about it. We took 45 minutes of afternoon All Things Considered off of NPR, and then they turned the satellite and gave it to the East Indian Literacy Program. So we wound up with a 45-minute slot, and no one knew what to do with it. And George, the guy from San Diego, said, okay, so we'll call it 45 Desperate Minutes. And what we actually did was almost invented that was the week that was before that ever aired, because what we were doing was ripping wire copy, feature copy, and then I would brush into my office and turn this stuff into little skits and announcements and things like that, and then we would put together a 45-minute show that was basically a kind of a free-form take on the feature news of the day. We interspersed headlines and all that sort of stuff. So we were serious for very brief parts of the thing, but most of it was just high humor. And we called it 45 Desperate Minutes because at the time you could get 22 minutes onto a 10-inch reel of tape, and normally we had the first tape done before the show started, and we were editing and putting together skits during that 22 minutes for the second half of the show. So someone would run in with a 10-inch reel and throw it on the deck for the second half of the show, and we usually barely made it. Several times we had to read the last 4 or 5 things live on mic in order to make it by the end of the show.
What about radio makes it so magical for you?
Oh, television, which is the other medium that I've worked in, and film, you have to have a visual image for everything you do. if nothing else, you have to have a picture of someone sitting there thinking while you're while some musing is going on. Radio, you're never required to supply the visual image. The listener does that. And so the beauty and the wonder of radio is that whoever's listening to you sees what's in his mind's eye or her mind's eye. And then what you do is through voice and music and timing and all of the wonderful pieces that make the microphone side of the radio, you feed that vision, but it's supplied by the other person, which means that it's a form of communications that's just, there is no nothing else where basically the other person is as participatory in as radio. And you can listen to the radio and not be involved in it, but if it's truly made into involving radio, then you almost can't not listen to it.
You spent a few years away from the world of radio.
I did.
You're a teacher.
Yeah, my last job in broadcasting was selling television time for Channel 11 in Fairbanks, and I conceived the idea of going up and selling the then fairly successful new business program at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I was going to put them on the air and advertise their program, and what they did was offered me a job and enrolled me in their Master's of Business Administration program. So I wound up getting an MBA and then going on getting a doctorate back at Washington State University in marketing. And then I spent 25 years in academia, teaching as a professor and then ultimately as a statistical analyst, most recently at the University of Alaska Southeast, where I retired in July.
I'm talking to Pat Moore, who will be taking over a few of the responsibilities for Juno Afternoon as time sees fit for me to take a vacation here or there. Met Pat as he was coming by to pick up a desk. We advertised on Freecycle, and I said, you want to do radio sometimes? He goes, sure, when? Right now. Okay, well, come on down. What kind of things do you want to talk about on a Juno Afternoon in your tenure?
Well, Juno Afternoon is a wonderful forum. First of all, I know from my friends and myself that it's where you find out what's going on in Juno. It's like this wonderful calendar. I love Nancy DeCherney's little featurette once a week that basically brings us the whole art scene in one big swell swoop. And if you've got a pencil and a piece of paper and you can write it all down, you know what you're going to be doing from her conversation through Wednesday afternoon. And this is an amazing town for having such a small number of people, but being so isolated, we have to do this all ourselves. So the opportunity to do so many different things gives us such an active and wonderful cultural life in Juneau, and this is one of the best places I know of. The Juneau Afternoon Show is one of the best places I know of to get hooked into that. Plus, in this job, you get a chance to meet some of the most interesting people who contribute so much. I was here the other day when you interviewed Buddy Tabor, and he's such a wonderful interview because he really connects with the person and when you ask him a question, he gives you an honest answer, and it's wonderful to have that flow going on, and I really like participating in that. So I'm really looking forward to working with the guests who come in and helping them to find their audiences for their events.
All right, Pat, thank you very much for coming down and filling in for me here and there. I'm not sure when you're exactly going to fill in or when I could take a vacation, but I know you'll be doing the show tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Broadcast support comes from McDonald's, now serving mango pineapple smoothies at McDonald's, open daily in Juneau on Trout Street in the Valley.
This is the music of Zool Bailey, who will be performing in live in concert this Monday, May 5th, at the University of Alaska Southeast, in concert with Edwarda Jen Pratt. She'll also be appearing with Larry West this Sunday at 6 o'clock in a special radio program on KRNN News. KRNN Radio, excuse me. You're tuned to KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Rock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Davis listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Huna at 91.9. An excursion inlet in Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. You can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juno on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up tomorrow on a June afternoon, we'll talk about the climbing wall at the Zagorn Youth Center with guest Jess Brown. Ken Fix will be here to highlight tomorrow night's film at the Planetarium, The Day the Earth Stood Still. Kathy Reddy will be talking about Singing in the Rain, and Karen Smolin will be talking about high school after-school classes for other... we'll learn about that tomorrow. With the forecast for tonight, looks like mostly cloudy skies with areas of fog in the morning. Partly cloudy skies predicted for tomorrow night.